Good morning, everybody. So lovely to see you all here in person. Thank you so much for making the trip to see us today. It's a beautiful day, and what a shame we can't see outside at the moment. You get this real strange sense in here of being in a dungeon, I feel. Ali, are you taking photos over there? I'd like to start by acknowledging the Ngunnawal people who are the traditional custodians of the land and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. Sovereignty was never ceded. This land was taken by force and has been retained by force. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Oh, click. Thank you, TT.
I didn't know what I was doing.
I forgot. They don't automatically move. Look, I should start off by saying I'm Jessica Annerley, and this is my dear colleague, Teresa Thomas. Together we lead the quality assurance team with Children's Education and Care Assurance. We are so fortunate to remain connected with the sector and meet and visit so many of your services and see your commitment to children and the sector in action through our work. So we're really grateful for that. Thank you. And like I said, it's so lovely to actually see your faces, although I have to say I'm struggling a little bit to remember what people look like in person after seeing your faces on the screen so much over the last few years. This morning we will introduce the changes to the approved learning frameworks before handing over to Lisa Surrett, who will be talking as the real subject matter expert here. Sorry, Lisa. Lisa's been a part of the trial of the reviewed frameworks at her esteemed service. So what we will be covering this morning is why have the approved learning frameworks been updated, what's changed, and implementation. And Teresa and I will cover that for you shortly. But I do feel like you're probably all over this, so bear with us. So thinking about... Oh, you've done it already. Thank you. There are two nationally approved learning frameworks that have been in place under the NQF, as you're aware. So these are Belonging, Being and Becoming and My Time, Our Place. And these frameworks have been in use for over a decade and implemented via regulation since 2012. Governments consider them effective and sector feedback agrees. And they've gained strong international reputations. I've heard Rhonda talk about that a lot. So I'll just reiterate that. In December, the Education Ministers commissioned a review and update and endorsed the terms of reference. And the aim of the review and update was to maintain currency and relevance, reflect recent developments in practice and knowledge, and to support service providers and staff to meet the learning and development needs of each child. So when the update was commissioned, and you'll see here it was done as a project by these universities. So a steering committee was comprising representatives from all jurisdictions oversaw the delivery of the project. And in the ACT, we were so fortunate to have Wendy McDuff a part of that steering committee. And so many of you will know her and know her as the amazing advocate she is for children and quality education and care. So I feel like we are so lucky that we had Wendy on that steering committee. And so a national consortium led by a partnership between Macquarie University, Queensland University of Technology and Edith Cowan University was engaged by CEQA on behalf of all governments to deliver this project. So the project commenced in 2021 and was delivered over three stages.
Sorry.
No, you're good, you're on it. And the updates to both of the frameworks are the results of a robust process to assess options and provide recommendations for change. And look, this included a lot of things, reviewing contemporary research, comprehensive stakeholder engagement nationally, and piloting of proposed changes across a range of education and care settings. During stages one and two, the literature review, surveys and stakeholder feedback on the discussion paper highlighted the strengths of the original frameworks and identified areas where they could be improved. And during stage three, the consortium piloted the potential updates to the two national frameworks, and that was in 16 early childhood and USH services across Australia. And there was a variety of service types, including in the ACT, the AIS Caretakers Cottage, led by Lisa, who'll be presenting with us shortly. What I do want to highlight, which I found really interesting, was that during stages one and two, the consortium was informed by the views of more than 5,400 educators, service providers, families, children and young people, and other professionals from all jurisdictions and all types of education and care services. And something else of note was things like the Productivity Commission inquiries and other reviews, such as the Disability Standards for Education and Royal Commission outcomes on mental health and child safe principles were also used to inform the review. So in acknowledging the importance of the frameworks continuing to act as effective enablers of high quality education and care, all Australian state and territory education ministers have now collectively approved the EYLF version 2.0 and My Time, Our Place version 2.0. The National Learning Frameworks version 2.0 have been published already. I'm sure you're all over this. And services can start using them when they feel ready to and must use them from early 2024. So stay tuned. Obviously, ASEQA is providing guidance and information about that. I will throw to Teresa to go through what has changed.
So I get to do the good bit.
Yeah.
I get the fun bit. So basically, across the framework documents, we've seen a mix of clarifications and expanded explanations across both the approved learning frameworks, and a small number of more substantial changes, including the addition of three new principles and updated practices. In particular, the updates have strengthened the connection between the approved learning framework version 2.0 and the National Quality Standard in such areas as transition, sustainability, theoretical approaches, critical reflection, the importance of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander ways of being and knowing, and doing, and inclusion. Okay, so obviously we're not going to get to unpack them today. We're just briefly going to overview and highlight some of the changes. And I guess this is where we get to highlight our favourites and the ones that gave us joy. So the key updates: strengthening Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander perspectives throughout the frameworks, including the vision, principles, practices and outcomes, and I'll do a little bit more on that later, and strengthening the link between the vision and the planning cycle, and acknowledging that high-quality programs have strategic and reflective approach to planning, play, leisure and learning. Okay, so there were three new principles: Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander perspectives, which, again, we'll talk about in a minute. Sustainability, which is an old friend of all of ours from National Quality Standard. And collaborative leadership and teamwork. This focuses on the leadership and teamwork as a collective activity driving quality programs, practices and outcomes for children. It acknowledges that all educators exercise leadership in their daily work as they lead their own ethical decisions and take professional and personal responsibility for the actions that they take. Like I said, and one of the updates for the strengthened principles, which this one makes my heart sing a bit, the secure, respectful and reciprocal relationships now includes relational pedagogy, and I love this. This recognises the importance of connections and that learning and development takes place in a nest of relationships. Research has shown, we already all knew this, that positive, caring relationships and interactions with others plays a crucial role in healthy brain development and for children's optimal learning, development and well-being. There's been other strengthening and updates, including with partnerships. This principle has been strengthened to include working with diverse families and developing cultural safety, cultural safe spaces. And ongoing learning and reflective practices has been renamed to critical reflection and ongoing professional learning. This is strengthening the critical reflection as a part of everyday professional practice. So the practices. These have been reduced from 8 to 7. Some have been renamed, some clarifications have been made, and practices have been strengthened and aligned. Exciting is the strengthening of the connection between play-based learning and intentionality. And this is something we all do really well as educators. Learning through play and intentional teaching have been combined in recognition that in quality education and care environments, educators are intentional in all aspects of the curriculum and act deliberately, thoughtfully, purposefully, and support children's learning in their play. Another key change that we wanted to highlight was cultural competence changing to cultural responsiveness. The renaming of the practice to cultural responsiveness reflects a deeper understanding of all cultures and diversities and a commitment to embedding Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander perspectives in all areas of professional practice. Cultural responsiveness is characterised by respect for cultures that are not your own, ongoing self-reflection, and continued learning and a commitment to improving professional practice in this space. This is the slide. This is on its own slide to reflect the significance of this change. Given the major focus of the changes relate to embedding Australian Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander perspectives through both the approved learning frameworks, the consortium also engaged with a range of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander services, peak bodies and relevant stakeholders. The much greater focus on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander perspectives was strongly supported through these engagements. Integrating Western and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander knowledge and perspectives across all aspects of children's education and care practice represents one of the most significant shifts within the framework. This evolution acknowledges the important role that early childhood and school-age education and care in the authentic advancement of reconciliation in Australia. Okay, and as Jess has already touched on this is just to give you a bit of a visual. So in 2022, the updates of version 2.0 were endorsed by the Education Minister. In 2023, where we are now, we can use both. So this is our familiarisation phase, and we're seeing this in the reflection that's occurring in assessment and ratings. As we moderate reports, we're seeing this coming through, that you're already reflecting on this and starting to think about what this is going to look like, and through phone calls that we're getting into SECA. And in 2024, it'll be everyone using the new 2.0 version. Okay. So now we would like to introduce to you Lisa Surrett from AIS, Caretakers Cottage Childcare Centre, who will be sharing with us her team's learning and where they plan to go with this. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. We're going the wrong way. Okay. I'd like to start with the acknowledgement of country that the children at the cottage have written. Thank you, Ngunnawal people, for sharing your land. We love you. You lived here before we all came along. We will share it with our friends and keep them safe from dangers. We will keep the animals, the trees and the waterholes safe. We will share the bush tucker and we'll give them to each other. Thank you. Now, I'm going to go off-piste here before I start, because I was reflecting on our engagement with the regulatory authority. I don't think there's many jurisdictions that have these opportunities to, you know, connect with each other, but also connect with the regulatory authority. And I think I take it for granted. So I'd like to thank you for those opportunities. And I was at the Early Childhood Australia conference last year, listened to Wendy at a panel discussion when she got her award, well-deserved award, and the question was asked about something important she'd like to share. And she shared that we should be considering our regulatory authority and those staff that work inside those authorities as our greatest advocates. And I think sometimes we forget that, and I'd like to acknowledge that. Yeah, my relationship with SECA has always been that, and I think it's a really positive thing for us. And possibly, I'd like to think, maybe even unique for us, so I think we should be celebrating it. So, thank you. Okay. So I'm focusing on the pilot here. So I was involved in a lot of stages of the review, but the pilot was the part that I wanted to share with you. And I wanted to share with you what we got out of it. I suppose, you know, we contributed a lot in terms of being able to share what we thought of it with the consortium, and they took all that information, and that was what informed, you know, the end result. But it was a really rich learning experience for us. And so what I wanted to share with you was some of that, because I think that sort of thing is what you will discover when you start deep diving into the new frameworks. So the pilot ran over a six-week period early last year, and throughout that pilot we were providing feedback to the consortium on the clarity and the usability and the efficacy of the potential updates, and we were sharing our insights and opportunities for further improvement and on implementation as well. The senior educators were participating in that, and they were looking at those changes, those recommended changes, and implementing them and providing feedback as they went along. We also participated in focus groups with the other pilot centres that were involved, and shared and reflected on those changes together. And each week of the pilot, we contributed documentation examples, which is what I'll be sharing with you today, that showed our changes in practice. And we made weekly video diaries that reflected on the changes as well. And the pilot also had the opportunity for children's voices. The children only gave permission for those to be shared with the consortium, so I'm not sharing any of those today, but they did provide a rich opportunity for the consortium to get the voices of everybody involved in the frameworks. And I did want the educators here because they did all the hard yards, but, you know, like all of you, they're back there holding the fort for me with lots of changes happening on the team. Okay. So each pilot service got to focus on different recommendations and therefore, you know, different principles, practices and outcomes. There were some commonalities in that. And we did get to put up our hand for particular ones that interested us or that we thought were important to us. And then we were able to trial those recommendations that were assigned to us. Educators had choice about how they did that, but the effort and the attempt was to try and get feedback on all of those during the pilot period. So we were looking at the vision generally, around principle one, secure, respectful and reciprocal relationships. Practice three, around play-based learning and intentionality. Practice 7, which was assessment and evaluation for learning, development and wellbeing. Outcome 3, children have a strong sense of wellbeing. And outcome 5, children are effective communicators. It was important to us and certainly something that the consortium wanted us to do, that we should continue to plan in the way and work in the same way we always do. So we didn't try and put a different approach over the top of anything. We continued to do things the way we always had. We were just using the new frameworks to as the lens for what we were doing. We used Story Park for our pedagogical documentation and also for communicating with families. So we created tags in Story Park that reflected the wording of the changes and started using those straight away. And we created a child called Alf, and all the documentation went into that child so we could see it all together. And in the weekly video diaries, we were structured in a way that we could explore what had worked for us, what didn't work for us, and what memorable moments we had. So it might be a light bulb moment, an important moment of learning for an educator or a child, or an example of how implementing those changes had changed the way we worked. And we also had Dr. Faye Hadley visit us on a number of occasions, and giving us feedback or answering questions or going through the changes with us. Having a critical friend was a really positive experience for us. Wish we still had her, but there you go. And that supported us immensely. And the next few slides, I'm going to be sharing the documentation and sort of talking a bit about, you know, the influence that that documentation had on outcomes for children and on our own practice as well. I'm hoping you can see it. So if you can't, up the back, let me know, because a lot of detail in some of the slides. If you can't, I'll just talk, you know, briefly through it. Okay. So what was our experience? Life happens. We did this pilot in January 2022. I don't know if you can cast your mind back in the ACT to January 2022. You might have wiped it from your memory. We had, you know, it's the usual early year. We had a lot of new children starting, a lot of children transitioning rooms, families returning from leave, so resettling children into the program. We had a new COVID wave, so we had room closures. We had isolation and quarantining if you happened to be a, you know, almost not close contact. We had, you know, COVID reporting. Oh, it was an interesting period of time. We were looking at wellbeing, so that was a good thing. But we also were working with a cohort of centres around Australia that were dealing with fire and flood. So in context, we were actually quite lucky that that was the hardest thing for us. But there were times during the trial where staff were feeling overwhelmed, and we needed to acknowledge that. We needed to acknowledge that, and we needed to understand that sometimes life happens and, you know, you just need to get on with it and need to acknowledge where that happens. But that was the most difficult part of the implementation, was managing those challenges at that time. I can see that's going to be hard to read, so I'll read it for you. So once we got into the groove of the pilot, we realised the importance of the changes. Now, sometimes a tweak, just a tweak in the wording, and, you know, I could hear that just in the previous presentation around just changing a word in a principle or an outcome changes the lens that you view something through. And that was a really significant part of what we learned as well, that tweak in the wording might open up a whole new way of addressing an issue or of assessing learning or supporting a child or a family. So in this example, the educator had brought in this resource and sat with the child and talked about how they could use it, and the child saw the phone in her hand and said, well, maybe we could Google it. And so they did, and he found a picture on Google of this particular product and a way of using it, and spent a lot of time using that as a prompt to create the same picture, and got very excited. There's a discussion in there, and you'll see this when you get it in. I think you'll get this in the package, that he was very excited about that, wanted to share it with everybody, and then wanted to continue to explore that opportunity using technology to explore that opportunity. So for us, that was a really interesting piece, because there was there is a new outcome that looks at communication using digital technology, and it's not something that we do a lot of. So we actually have a deliberate decision not to include technology in our spaces. So this is a really good provocation for us about how we can incorporate digital technologies as learning tools in our spaces, but still implement the 24-hour movement guidelines and the sedentary play guidelines that we try to work to, sedentary behaviour guidelines. But it was a really rich experience, and it was very much informed by the changes to that outcome. And you can't see it in there, but when you look at it, the learning tags are all there, so you can see the educators' thought processes when they were writing these documentation. This is another example of the same outcome, with an emphasis on technology. So the educators use the technology to play songs to support transition for a child. But in this observation, the educator was trying to support a child who was so engaged in play that they weren't interested in getting a nappy change, but we needed to look at their well-being and how we could support their well-being at the same time as supporting their desire for play. So she found a way in with the child's interest in, I think it is Disney music, which became a really important ritual for that child to engage in that nappy change ritual using Disney music and singing with educators. And not only did that technology therefore inform that, but it was also a really good opportunity to look at that relational pedagogy and to build relationship. So it did look at reciprocal relationships and well-being in that observation as well. Okay. And again, learning outcome 5, children are effective communicators. But that has strengthened guidance around communicating through the arts. So in this observation, the educator was looking at the importance of intentional teaching and the importance of well-being. So this was a really, this experience provided a real well-being lens for that child. This was something really important to them to be able to document and communicate using this medium. The critical reflection is there, but the whole learning story had an emphasis on mark making. So in this one, they were encouraging the children to use the chalk and the concrete to explore mark making and communicating with peers. Another thing that we found was just using the tags changed the way we observed, the way we assessed and planned, the way we implemented and evaluated the learning that was going on. So just putting those tags into Story Park and thinking about them when we were doing our observations changed the way we observed or changed the way we recorded those observations. So during the trial period, educators were often focused on one experience or one observation or one interaction. But even in those small moments, looking through a lens changed the way they approached the experience and how they recorded it. And in some cases led to quite important changes in practice. In this example, the educator was observing reciprocal play between two children, but because she was looking at it through the lens of Principle 1, she was able to critically reflect on the notion that this was actually an important ritual for the child each morning, and that one that was connecting to peers rather than simply being a play experience. So in this one, she was observing a child who was doing this ritual every morning around using the sandpit and pouring sand, etc., etc., and then engaging a peer in that play. And it was a really beautiful experience, but it became the transition into care experience, and she always engaged another child in that experience. So it became very, very obviously about relationships with a peer for that child. That's something important for them in their transition into care every day. And in this example, educators were prompted to consider reciprocal relationships between children and how they impacted on well-being. So this one was a recording, but this was an exchange between two toddlers, one who was really upset as their parent had left for the day, and the other child who was very intentionally providing comfort for that child. And this interaction was really rich and beautiful, and the educators were able to see it through that relational lens in Principle 1. And you can't see this, I'm really sorry, I thought it'd be clearer, but we made small changes, but they led to big improvements. In this one, the educator was looking at practices around transitions, because we had a lot of children moving from room to room at that time. So this educator was trying to support children who were moving from the toddler room into the preschool room. And because she was looking at well-being and she was looking at child agency as part of that, and she was focusing on those things, she reflected on that transition process, the transition plan we had in place. It was very adult-oriented, so it was an opportunity. It was written there, and all the questions were ones that either educators or parents could answer for us as part of that transition into care. So she was reflecting on whether we could include children more effectively into that process. Can we ask children questions about what transition is important for them? Who are the adults in the space that you would go to if you needed help? What do you need in order to feel safe? So they were questions that we then included in those transition plans, and then that led to further discussion about whether labelling the transition plan in that way actually affects the way we use it. So on enrolment, the children, we have an all about me plan. Why doesn't that move with the child through the room, and the children have the opportunity to directly contribute to those plans? So that started as a small reflection on well-being and how we can support that using the new practices, principles and outcomes, but led to a significant change in transitioning children through rooms. So the two that you can't see there, the two new sections that we added were, what cups do I need? So we use a Phoenix Cups approach to support children. What cups do I need to support my well-being, and how can they be filled, and who can fill them? And do I have any special rituals I have during my day at the cottage that I would like you to continue to support? The other significant thing for us was every educator took a different approach to exploring the changes and documented them differently. We certainly support the idea that educators have different strengths, different styles, different ways of documenting, different ways of learning, different lenses they look at things through. So two educators would look at the same experience and have a completely different take on it. So it was really important for us to support that. But some educators were also looking at it about thinking about how that would change their practice. So they were provoking change to practice, not just looking at it from a pedagogical lens. So this one was, this educator was looking at this observation from a fundamental movement skills perspective. So she was looking at that and documenting how that child was being supported to develop her fundamental movement skills. So the first paragraph there is all about the experience of the child trying to navigate a piece of equipment and not being able to and getting quite frustrated with it and wanting help and you know, eventually getting stuck and needing an educator to support her out of that climbing frame. There's a middle paragraph that's not there that I couldn't include, that then afterwards she moved on to the bikes and she spent a lot of time developing the skill set to push that bike around and got really satisfied with that, and then also started walking and was, you know, showing how proud she was to the educators of that. But so that was a really rich observation, and there was a lot of critical reflection in that. But the thing that the educator took away from it was the fact that the well-being and agency of the child wasn't supported in looking at it from a fundamental movement skills perspective. So we take an approach, a freedom of movement approach, which means we don't put children into positions they can't put themselves into. So we don't use high chairs, we don't use bum boats, we don't put a child in a tree, we let them climb up the tree themselves, all those sorts of things. In this experience, that's what we did. But from a well-being perspective, if we'd supported that child to get into that position, you know, there might have been a different outcome for them in terms of their well-being. And in terms of autonomy and listening to a child's voice, she was trying to tell the educator quite strongly she wanted support to be able to achieve something with that equipment. So if should we be changing our lens, are there circumstances when it's really important to support agency or well-being instead of simply freedom of movement? So, you know, it provoked a really important conversation that is still ongoing in all sorts of parts of our program, where we're looking at freedom of movement, but also looking at well-being and agency. And the final thing I would say here, and I think that was reflected in the conversation earlier about teamwork and collaboration, that there was a lot of conversations that happened with educators whilst they were going through the pilot, when they were unpacking different things, asking questions, asking for clarification. You know, all our observations get edited before they get published, so somebody else gets to have a look at it and give feedback. So there was a lot of that collaboration going on, and it did make a difference to the quality of the documentation. Okay, where to from here? So we've had lots of staffing changes, like you probably all have, in the last 12 months, and we were only exploring a small part of the recommendations, so there's still a lot of learning for us to do and a lot of implementation for us to do. We have started using them, but different educators have a different level of comfort with using them, throwing themselves in or having to look a bit more closely at that, and we're really comfortable with that. I mean, we've got a year, so we really want people to feel confident before they're starting to... when they're using them. So we're letting them, you know, we're encouraging people to go at their own pace. We've got all the documents available. We've printed them all off. I'd love to see, you know, for those services who don't have the capacity to print them off, would be given a copy, but, you know. I'll put that out there. I think that would be really important. We're taking advantage of all the resources, and I know when I was sitting at the table, other people talked about the ECA webinars. You know, they're like a critical friend when you don't have a Dr. Faye Hadley sitting next to you, and take advantage of the webinars because she's in them. But I think they're a really great way of getting more familiar with them, and they can provoke discussion. We're certainly using them. And we're using all the documents on the ASEQA website as well, because they're a really good touch point to just see the major changes. And we're going to be using the pilot approach to unpack it over the next 6 months, because we found that really effective as well. So we will be unpacking it as a team. So in small teams or large teams, we'll be taking one of those changes, we'll be thinking about what it means for us, we'll be reading documentation or looking at webinars, asking each other questions, starting conversations, either in team meetings or on team spaces. We take a provocation approach, so teams will then look at something and think about what it means for them. So as an example, with Outcome 5, children are effective communicators, they might want to ask the question about how we can ensure we promote safe ways of using digital technology. And that then would lead to a provocation and a discussion and all sorts of conversations, changes in the way we do things. As I said, we could just sleep in. Some people have started using it already. But we will also use the approach that we use in the pilot with our weekly conversations, is what's worked with that. So we looked at this learning outcome and we used it. What worked for us? What didn't work? Was there something memorable about that changed the way you looked at it or the way you thought about it? Let's have those conversations, because then that helps other people think about it differently as well. We found that a really effective way of thinking about the changes was what worked for us, what didn't work, and what was a memorable moment for us in that week when we were looking at that practice. And we always put those provocations and those discussions in our quality improvement plan. So we found that really effective too. So that lens, that question will go into our quality improvement plan, and then we can look at it again in a week or a month and think about how it's changed practice until it becomes a strength again. So that's me. One thing I wanted to say, and I think it's already been said already, one thing I'd say is we've got this. I mean, we're already doing it. I think what has been emphasised is that all these changes are what we asked for. There was so much engagement. I know so many of you around the room were either completed surveys or involved in focus groups, had an opportunity to contribute. Many of us have been doing this for years. It's the framework's catching up with us, not the other way around. So, these are things that we've wanted, and in many cases we're already doing. It's just about using them and using them, that being able to visibly see that we're using them. So, we've got this. I'm really excited about it. I was involved in all those stages of review, really impressed with the level of engagement from the sector, and it's obvious to me. So I was trawling social media after the frameworks were released, overwhelmingly positive from people who understood and could see that what they wanted was in there. So, I think this is a really exciting time for us to be using something that reflects what we're doing and is contemporary. So go out there and just enjoy, because I think it's going to make a big difference to us, how we document our practice, not necessarily how we do it. So that's us. Thank you.
All right, come to the most important part of the day. That's morning tea. So encourage everyone to come back at 10:45 on the dot for Rhonda's presentation. Big thanks to Lisa and to Jess and Teresa for that. And I'd like to return the compliment to Lisa, because Lisa's been an amazing leader in the sector and has influenced policy and quality in ways that probably many people wouldn't necessarily know, but she has over the years. And I don't know if Northside recorded it, but there was a seminal presentation that you gave on quality and becoming a quality service. So I reckon if you can dig that out from Northside, it's well worth every minute. So thank you so much, Lisa. Enjoy morning tea. Look forward to seeing you back here at 10:45. 10:45. Thanks.